WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything up in the line.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Welcome to this edition of the Sunday Spin for May the 20th, 2018. Welcome to our weekly look at the world of politics and policy as we go from Washington to City Hall and Springfield in between. Time to grab that Sunday paper, get that hot cup of coffee. Hot cup of coffee this morning, and we'll do our best to get your week off to a good start. Well, I said May the 20th, but maybe February 62nd?
Yeah, when we're looking at 45 outside, highs.
And rain.
Just and rain. 60s, the highs not getting out of the 50s today and tomorrow around the lakefront.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still...
Don't kill the messenger.
Oh, no. I'm still wearing, like, layers.
I know you are.
That's how ridiculous this weather is. And, you know, it's amazing the variation from the lakefront to, like, southwest suburbs and west suburbs. You know, it 10, 20-degree difference sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And today is an example, or tomorrow especially, highs in the 70s inland, only 60 near the lake. So you could have a 15-degree difference easily for tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't think it'll even get to 60 downtown.
Maybe not. Lake Michigan water temperature right now, well, it's not available. So apparently the temperature, the thermometer froze.
as
cold as that water is.
Yeah, and that's certainly not helping things. And with this weather, it's not going to warm up anytime. The lake water is not going to warm up to help the temps.
No.
Oh, yeah.
And how about this? Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
Next weekend.
Yes.
They're getting the beaches ready. I see that early in the morning as I go up and down Lakeshore Drive. And it's going to be a rather chilly memorial. I saw a forecast, an extended forecast for Monday of next week, Memorial Day. Not bad, but only 70, you know.
No.
Partly sunny, 70, so we'll see.
And that will probably be 70 inland.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The same deal again.
Yeah.
Oh, I really am getting tired of this. And also just the cloudiness and the rain. And I wasn't expecting, you know, rain the way it was the last couple of days. You know, kind of surprise showers on Friday.
Yes.
It's grilling time, you know.
Rain held off for the Walk of Fame event on Friday. That was
thankfully good. Yes.
But boy, when the sun went behind the clouds, it cooled off quick out there.
Well, I saw dear Roger Treemster with the Blackhawks blanket draped over.
Oh, that was the first thing he said when they introduced him. He said, "Anybody have a blanket?"
He was offering big bucks for it too.
Yeah. And then somebody gave him an official Blackhawks blanket. Andy was there. In fact, Andy and I were commenting about how quickly it cooled off when that sun went behind the clouds. Right, Andy?
Yeah, I kept moving in the sun. I didn't care if I could see the stage or not. I just kept moving toward the sun.
And Friday was a day I didn't layer up. And so I just had, like, a windbreaker on. That was a mistake.
Yes, it was.
That was a big mistake.
You are correct, sir.
Oh, but chilly outside, it is, I think, 110 degrees here in the Allstate Showcase studio. It is very, very warm in here.
Warm in here, too.
So apparently the building management is struggling, or either that or trying to push us out the door a little faster.
What do you think? I think it's the latter.
Yeah. I think the latter.
Well, we'll go when it's time, darn it.
When our number is up.
When our number is up, yeah. That's one way to put it. Thank you so much, Dave. Did you watch the royal wedding?
I watched replays of it. Okay. I didn't actually see it as it was live. What an event. It was a beautiful affair. There was terrific music all the way around. And the Episcopalian bishop's sermon was amazing.
From Chicago.
Yes.
And I did like the Tribune tweeted the headline out, the the Twitter version of the headline was Northwestern grad marries British guy. Which, yeah, it's not my thing. I didn't really pay that much attention to it. But I did hear about the sermon, which was tremendous, and the choral version of Stand By Me, which I thought was outstanding.
How about that?
Always one of my favorite songs.
They cut to a shot of the Queen, Her Majesty, during the sermon, and she looked a little uncomfortable. She was kind of shifting around a little bit, not quite used to that type of presentation, I think.
No, not certainly in the Church of England, I'm sure.
Right.
But you
mentioned, Rick, the gospel choir singing Stand By Me. Then you had the young cellist playing Ave Maria.
Right.
What a wonderful contrast.
No,
terrific.
No, it was very nice event. You can say what you want about the royalty and how that kind of thing, but it just, it's nice to kind of be able to turn off the real world a little bit sometimes and watch something like that.
Which is the reason why I think people made the effort to go there. Not only watch it, but be there in person.
Right.
Plenty of people I saw on TV that were from Chicago to go there to visit.
It's diversions are nice. I mean, that's kind of why I like sports.
Mm-hmm.
Stanley Cup playoffs are just still exciting. And we can find out if Las Vegas actually goes to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Today. They have to win in Winnipeg, which hasn't been an issue for the teams in this particular series.
Right. It's been a kind of away game kind of thing. So it's 3-1 for
Vegas.
3-1. It's just, there's nothing better than Stanley Cup. I know I say it all the time.
But it's the truth.
There isn't anything better. But we've got that. The Cubs split doubleheader yesterday.
Yes, they did. They lost in heartbreaking fashion in Game 1. 5-4 in 11 innings of bases loaded walk by Justin Wilson, the reliever everyone loves to hate. But then they came back and they won 10-0 in the nightcap. And Jason Hayward back from the concussion protocol with career high tying 4 runs batted in,
which is good to see.
Absolutely right.
And the White Sox with a nice win over Texas.
Yeah, it was. Lucas Giolito struggled a little bit early. White Sox got down 3-0, but in the third inning with two outs, Daniel Polka, one of their young position players playing right field last night, came through with a two-run triple that put the White Sox ahead. And they're getting some really good bullpen pitching from some unlikely guys. This kid, Jace Fry, has been lights out. He came in and pitched in the eighth and got the first out in the ninth inning yesterday as well.
Well, and then the problems I keep seeing, though, are those early runs that they give up.
Yeah.
And it's, they're always having to play to try to fight back, climb back.
Yeah, and it's the biggest issue, too. I mean, and again, you're looking at a bunch of young guys. I know James Shields has given up a couple of those early runs as well, and Carson Fulmer, who's now in AAA to try to work things out for him, and hopefully he gets back because this kid's got a great arm and a lot of talent.
Boy, they didn't waste any time sending him.
No, and I think it was the right call just because, you want these guys to get on the job training, which is basically what this whole season's about, getting the younger guys a chance to learn and take their bumps and their bruises a little bit at this level, because you're not going to be able to replicate this level anywhere else.
Well, correct.
But you don't want to leave a kid out there to get his head beaten in every time. And you got to try to figure out, is it a mechanical situation? Is it a mental situation? Those kind of things. And you really can't you can't take the time to do that here when you're trying to, and you're trying to be competitive in games. It's not like they're trying to lose. So I think it was the right call.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to see somebody struggle.
Yeah.
And I mean,
what, he's a great kid too.
His ERA was like 8 something.
Yep.
And then that's demoralizing. And you want the professional experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, there's nothing like that. But still, you don't want to demoralize somebody.
No, I mean, then that kind of messes with confidence. And Ricky Renteria was telling us yesterday that he's probably not been around a more confident kid than Carson Fulmer, but even the most confident of people start to question things a little bit when they continue to have the results that he's had, and they have not been very good of late. And it's really weird because he came off of one of his best starts ever 3 starts ago against Kansas City, went 7 innings and didn't give up a run, and then all of a sudden they got pounded around by the Cubs and got pounded around by the Rangers. So it's going down there just to kind of work things out, still as a starter.
Now, let's hope for the best with him, too, because, like, as you said, he's a great kid, and hope for the best for the Sox as we go through this learning curve of the season.
Correct.
Is, I think,
that's
the
good
way to put it. Well, Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news. Andy has the latest sports. Producer Casera's here to field your phone calls. We're at 312-981-7200. You can text us at 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. And we're on Twitter at @SundaySpin. Engineer Bob is here looking for the umbrella. Remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcasts at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll speak to Republican State Senator Sue Resin of Morris at after the 7:30 news. We'll catch the GOP perspective of what's going on in Springfield as the end of the spring session nears. After news and sports at 8, we'll talk to Democratic State Representative Bob Rita of Blue Island. He's a point person on gambling legislation in Springfield, and we'll discuss what's next for Illinois after the U.S. Supreme Court said states can legalize sports betting. And then after the news and sports at 8:30, we'll talk to Chicago mayoral candidate Lori Lightfoot. Most recently, she was president of the Chicago Police Board, the Civilian Police Disciplinary Board, and we'll talk to her about her campaign. That's all up ahead. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune in the Allstate Showcase Studio in historic Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. And I was outside looking at the U.S. flags on Michigan Avenue, and I noted that for virtually every building right here in this location, all the flags are flying at full staff, except the folks at the Wrigley Building who got the message. We're told that flags should be at half staff because of the deadly school shooting in Santa Fe, Texas. Another school shooting. Another offering of thoughts and prayers from elected officials. 10 people dead. 8 students. 2 teachers. Thoughts and prayers. Here's President Trump.
This has been going on too long in our country. Too many years, too many decades now. We grieve for the terrible loss of life and send our support and love to everyone affected by this absolutely horrific attack. To the students, families, teachers, and personnel at Santa Fe High, we're with you in this tragic hour, and we will be with you forever. My administration is determined to do everything in our power to protect our students, secure our schools, and to keep weapons out of the hands of those who pose a threat to themselves and to others. Everyone must work together at every level of government to keep our children safe.
Thoughts and prayers. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. The president's personal lead spokes attorney, Rudy Giuliani, continued to make the rounds of television last week. On CNN, Chris Cuomo asked Giuliani why Trump shouldn't be interviewed by Robert Mueller. Here's Giuliani and a comparison of liars.
The president would testify tomorrow if it was about the truth. The truth is he had nothing to do with Russia. I was on that campaign. He didn't talk to Russians. He had nothing to do with Russia. He is as surprised about the Russian connection as you would be.
And why won't he just sit down and say that?
Because you've got people that are going to ask him questions about what did you say to him, what did you say to him. And you got Comey coming forward who will lie. They believe Comey rather than... Look, it's like Martha Stewart. Martha Stewart never would have gone to jail if she hadn't gone and testified. What do you think?
She lied. She lied.
Arguably. Lying is black and white. It isn't black and white. The president is not going to lie. Let's get that straight. The president is going
to
tell...
What gives you confidence to say...
Because I've gone over the whole thing. I've investigated the whole thing. There's nothing to lie about.
Out of habit. he practices mendacity.
That's a disgraceful comment about the President of the United States. Out of habit, the President defends himself against the press.
He abuses the truth. He misleads, he sometimes lies.
We want to talk about liars.
Which is saying something that he knows is untrue, and he does it to deceive.
If we're talking about liars, why don't we talk about Comey?
And, of course, Cuomo's remark after that was, one liar at a time. Gotta love politics in Washington. Well, let's bring things closer to home. We're speaking right now. Joining me on the phone is Sue Resin. She's a state senator, Republican from Morris. She's an assistant Republican leader of the chamber. Senator, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
I wanted to get your take, first of all, in light of the tragic shooting in Santa Fe, Texas. We have this legislation now, the governor's rewrite of some gun control legislation. Now we have the governor's kind of more comprehensive rewrite of reinstating the death penalty for murder of law enforcement or in cases of multiple deaths. We've got a 72-hour waiting period being expanded for all firearms, not just military-style firearms that was contained in the original bill, various changes involving taxation if counties want to, schools and counties want to impose a sales tax to provide for police officers in schools. It's a lot in one package. I was wondering, what are your thoughts on that legislation?
Well, you know, first of all, we're here because the increase in violence in our society, and this raises difficult and divisive issues. And as a result, the governor has taken this bill and he's proposed a comprehensive public safety bill to deal with situations that are arising. It seems like it's almost every day. But yes, his public safety bill includes a proposed death penalty for those who murder police officers or those who commit mass murders. He also proposes in this bill a ban for bump stocks. That was what was used in the Las Vegas mass shooting. And also there's a 72-hour cooling off period, not just for semi-automatic rifles when you go to purchase them, but also handguns. So this is a comprehensive bill. The governor has taken the lead on it. These are controversial topics, I understand that. But at the end of the day, we have a governor who's going to lead on this issue. And by proposing this piece of legislation that deals with public safety, it's at the very least, it starts a discussion in Springfield that we need to have.
Is it too comprehensive? I mean, there's various elements that, if they were separated out, might be voted on differently rather than putting it all together in one package. For example, the 72-hour cooling off period for all firearms might not be acceptable to some lawmakers. It's opposed by the National Rifle Association. It might be opposed by some downstate lawmakers. Obviously we have our, you know, regional diversity when it comes to guns. Issues like the death penalty, which since it was abolished 7 years ago, kind of a belief that that issue's already been decided and put away. I just wonder in its scope if it's just too much in one package and that maybe it ought to be dissected.
Well, you know, we often have large pieces of policy that have many different elements in it, some that we agree with and some areas that we disagree with, but again, this is a comprehensive public safety plan that's come from the governor. There are many elements in it that I agree with, but some that will not, be liked in my district as well. But the governor did propose bringing back the death penalty, but again, it's very specific for people who murder police officers or commit mass suicide. And mass murders, correct. But he also increased the standards for establishing guilt. Under this legislation, guilt must be determined beyond all doubt rather than a standard reasonable of doubt. Other issues, as you say, the 72-hour waiting period. I represent a pro-Second Amendment district. This is a challenge for members and constituents in my district, and so we certainly hear from them. But we look at the overall piece of legislation that's being voted on and see if it brings us in the right direction, the direction where we need to have this difficult discussion about public safety, safety in our schools, safety just, you know, in many of the soft targets that we've never had to think about before.
So in its totality, then, you support it?
Well, this bill will go to the...
Right, I know it's going to, it goes to a House hearing tomorrow that the Speaker is allowing it to proceed on a separate bill. But if it comes to the Senate in its totality, is that something you would support?
Certainly this bill, if it did come back to the Senate, which it won't, it will either be overridden, the AV will be overridden in the House, or the bill will not be voted on and be left to die. But, you know, there are aspects of this bill that I agree with, and I think in totality I'll look at this bill, and there are more good pieces of information in the bill than not, something that I probably would look at supporting. But again, in Springfield, especially at the end of session, when we're dealing with issues, if we get about 60% of what we want in a particular bill, you know, it's a good bill. And more importantly, though, it starts a discussion between both parties. This is a very serious topic. We've had numerous pieces of separate legislation trying to deal with, for instance, school violence that, in our opinion, you know, just run into roadblocks. So, again, by comprehensively taking a look at public safety and instituting certain things in public safety that we feel would be able to help not only the soft targets such as schools, but help with the other issues that we're dealing with, we feel that it would be a good bill and start a good conversation.
We're speaking with Republican State Senator Sue Resin from Morris. She's an assistant Republican leader in the chamber. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in historic Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. And joining me on the phone is Assistant State Senate Republican Leader Sue Resin, Republican from Morris. Senator, we're 11 days away from the end of session. You kind of alluded to how things happen at end of session. But I think the pressing thing on a lot of people's minds is the state budget. And I know that budgeteers have been meeting, but are they moving fast enough?
Well, 11 days till the end of our session is a long time in Springfield years. So, yes, to answer your question, the budgeteers continue to meet from both the House and the Senate. We also have the four leaders and the governor who continue to meet to move this process forward. The hope is to have a 12-month balanced budget by the end of May. And again, like you said, we have 11 days left. I'm always hopeful that we'll have an agreement before we adjourn at the end of May.
I mean, I do get a sense, push aside the rhetoric, I do get a sense that everybody really this time wants to have a budget.
Well, certainly the feeling, the sentiment in Springfield is different this year. Everybody does. Everyone wants to have a budget. We all want to have a balanced budget. However, you have two different philosophies how to get to that balanced budget. We've always said to cut and make government more efficient where you can, reform some areas so we can become more business friendly and keep taxes low. Because we recognize that the private sector needs to be a willing partner in Springfield dealing with the budget. So they see us as a business-friendly state. Businesses then will invest, they'll create jobs, and they will bring new revenue into the capital. Our friends across the aisle tend to, talk about another income tax increase, a progressive tax, as a way to balance the budget.
Not for this session, though.
Not for this session, but there's always talk about new revenue. How do we balance the budget? And, you know, we have a conversation about we need more revenue as opposed to we've always said we need to keep state taxes low. The way we get more new revenue is by encouraging businesses to be here. So that's the challenge when we're sitting at the table. But yes, I do feel that this year there is a willingness by both sides to continue to meet, have the discussions to close that. We're about a, I would say about $1 billion apart, in terms of balancing the budget. At the end of the day, however we get there, the governor has made it very clear and we support that we need a balanced budget to vote on. And, that's what we're hopeful that we will see at the end of May.
I know that you've expressed concerns about a bill that would deal with, municipal, water systems and potential privatization that would lead to massive rate increases. Can you tell me what's going on with that?
Well, we had a bill go through session, and I've been the minority spokesman for energy for quite a while here. So in energy, we've seen many bills dealing with infrastructure updates for the energy corridor, for, you know, ComEd, for Exelon, for the natural gas companies. We had this bill go through this past week that would allow private water companies to purchase municipals' water systems. The problem with the bill that passed is there were no caps that were included in this particular bill. In previous utility bills, we always have very hard caps to protect the consumers. In this bill, there are not hard caps. There were not hard caps included to protect new customers. Also, there was a the way it was written is essentially the ICC would have to approve everything that was presented to them by the private companies when they purchase these water systems at an overinflated price, and then the cost would simply be passed through to new customers and existing customers in that region. I felt that the bill did not protect consumers and the ratepayers who received that bill. As a result, many people that already have the two companies who the legislation was written for, when they receive their bill and they open them up, they, you know, they have sticker shock because their bills have been going up 20% to 30% over the course of the years. So I think there could have been more protections in there for the consumers.
Something that, as you say, the ICC would have no choice but to approve. But is there any kind of backup for, you know, as in other cases involving energy, about backup for the ICC to approve rate increases?
Well, in the past, these mergers could have happened without this piece of legislation passing, and then the bill would go before a hearing, before the ICC, and the ICC would have discretion. What expenses do we pass on to ratepayers at, you know, at a rate that they can pay for, so they don't have sticker shock when they open up their bills? This piece of legislation was written for and by two companies, Illinois American Water and Aqua Water. Those two companies only. So even if you're a private, smaller water company, this bill was not written for you. In the bill, it basically stated, and the bill was written by the companies, that the ICC would have to pass through the expenses to the ratepayers, which takes a lot of their power away from really, you know, being able to protect the consumers.
Right. The Commerce Commission is the kind of the rate-making authority in the state for utilities. And as you say, this legislation requires the ICC. It takes away that discretion of rate-making ability in this kind of a transfer.
Unfortunately, it does. And again, we will hear once the companies start purchasing the water systems at municipalities, within a year or so you will start hearing. We hear from constituents that have water from these two companies, and I hear constantly we have local meetings dealing with why is our water bill so high. So this will be a problem in the future. I think that there could have been better protections in there for the consumers.
So now, is this bill over in the House, or what's its status?
Well, the bill passed the House and the Senate and is waiting for the governor's.
So it's on the governor's desk. So
I'm asking the governor to veto the bill and start over. We've shown in the past that we can pass these type of legislations while protecting the consumers, and I think that's why we need to start over with this bill.
That's State Senator Sue Resin. She's Assistant Republican Leader from Morris, Illinois. Thank you so much for joining me, Senator.
Thanks for having me.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning and welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase studio. The folks on Showtime's program, The Circus, which airs at 7 p.m. on Sundays, they spoke to former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, and the former governor compared his Bridgegate scandal to what President Trump is going through.
I knew the whole time I'd done nothing, but you can't get that out.
Yeah.
Right? And you have to wait for prosecutors to be done, wait for legislative committees to be done, all that stuff.
Right.
And it's incredibly frustrating. That's what's happening to him. You know, I've told him many times, and I've said this publicly too, that when you're in the midst of something like this, there's nothing you can do to make it shorter. There's lots of things you can do to make it longer.
Yeah.
And I've continued to counsel him that, you know, talking about things publicly, whether it's, you know, a press conference or a speech or a tweet or whatever, just leads people to want to look more, not less.
That's former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. And, you know, I thought since the Mueller investigation has entered a second year and we have the president's protestations and that it's a witch hunt, and despite the indictments that Mueller has got obtained, it might be worthwhile to go back in the time machine a bit and hear another president complaining that a one-year investigation was going on too long and should be brought to a close.
I would like to add a personal word with regard to an issue that has been of great concern to all Americans over the past year. I refer, of course, to the investigations of the so-called Watergate affair. As you know, I have provided to the special prosecutor voluntarily a great deal of material. I believe that I have provided all the material that he needs to conclude his investigations and to proceed to prosecute the guilty and to clear the innocent. I believe the time has come to bring that investigation and the other investigations of this matter to an end. 1 year of Watergate is enough.
That, of course, Richard Nixon. Joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Democratic State Representative Bob Rito of Blue Island. Representative, thank you for coming in this morning.
Good morning, Rick. Thanks for having me.
I thought of you when the Supreme Court of the United States decided that states do have the ability to legalize sports gaming, and I know you're kind of a point person on gambling and wagering issues in the General Assembly, and I'm kind of curious how you see Illinois taking a look at this. Obviously, there's a potential revenue source here, which, of course, is kind of why everybody's looking at this. But I'm kind of curious how you see this process going forward.
Well, this is a new opportunity since the ruling and come a couple weeks ago. There's been talk early on this year about sports betting, but this opens up an opportunity for in how we look forward in moving with gaming expansion, something that we've talked about for a number of years here, and what's the best way to move forward. This is just another opportunity to put this package together that could provide revenue for the state.
I'm curious about perhaps an idea of whether sports gaming revenue in some way could become an earmarked account and perhaps look at it for a pension debt relief.
Well, and there could be a number of areas where the revenue could get provided to for. What I've learned through this, you know, it's not like pari-mutuel betting. You're betting against the house and the amount bet, the amount paid out. You got to be careful on how this is crafted. To it sounds like a whole lot's bet, but between the revenue that's generated might not be as much as we anticipate.
And the numbers are all over the map on potential revenue from this.
Yes, and so who
and
knows?
There's no exactly reality to it. I mean, it's just, you know.
And with it opening up, you know, all these states are looking in. There's a number of bills that have been introduced throughout
the country
on this. You know, preparation if the ruling would come down, and the ruling did come down, that states can do this. So this is just, but it's an opportunity, and it's a great opportunity for Illinois. Is I've been talking with different stakeholders. The big Senate Bill 7 is the latest version of the gaming expansion, and but it seems like every stakeholder is very interested in this. It might be the component that brings everybody together. To
which they never are.
No, and that's the unique thing about since this ruling. Everybody's interested.
You have the horse tracks, and then you have the casinos. You have the small gambling, the video poker.
Yeah, the video. You have the existing casinos, the new casino sites, along with the racetracks or racinos. So there's a number of interested parties that are all interested in the sports betting portion of it.
And there's, I mean, and as I said, we're still at a very preliminary phase here because it's not like we know how it would operate. We don't know what tax would be imposed, and you certainly don't want to see a tax imposed at a level that could put Illinois as uncompetitive.
It could, yes, it could be a disadvantage, and let alone just the regulation of it. What do you regulate and how do you regulate it? Be too restrictive, and then the black market still could be a major component in taking that revenue and or people that are going to sports bet.
And then you throw in a component like online sports betting and your phone app.
Wow, and it's been a big, the last couple of years about, you know, iGaming, online gaming, just as itself. Then you throw, as you say, you throw this on, people betting right off their apps. And then how frequently and what type of bets can you make?
Yeah,
you know?
And in-game bets versus pre-game bets, issues of not being able to bet on a single event and having to kind of do a parlay kind of thing.
Well, along with...
Don't ask me why I know about this, okay?
You know, is the first pitch going to be a strike ball or going to hit the batter? I mean, it could get as, in golf, how long the distance the drive will be. I mean, so it could, there's a lot of components to it. But this is, we're working through it, the best way to move forward, to whether it's going to be part of the package, not part of it separate, but it should be part of a gaming expansion package.
But you don't see this for this session.
Well, you know, this component, we're digging into it now. There's, 11 days left?
Right.
10 days, 11 days. The components of the new casinos, the racinos, and that, it's been around a while. We've
sure.
worked through some of this. This is just a new, and there's a lot to it, but we're going to, I've dove into it already, and we're going to see what we could come up with.
Well, as you say, you do have some general agreement with the interested parties, but at the same time, that's they're interested in it, but
yes.
We don't know what it is.
No, and that's what we're trying
and
to
coming
work
up with the it is the hard part, right?
And as I've worked on a number of these different issues, is you know, you ask one question, and all of a sudden you got four or five more. Well, what about the, you know, as I talked about the regulation or the tax structure, the how, you know, do you use iGaming or apps? They talk about this geofencing where if you cross the border, does it work? Does it not? So there is a lot of components to it, but it's a good opportunity. So in all the parties, as we mentioned a few minutes ago, are all interested in this component from the video gaming to race tracks to casinos to even new companies that are looking at this.
We're speaking to Democratic State Representative Bob Rita of Blue Island. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Showcase studio, along with Democratic State Representative Bob Rita from Blue Island. We're talking about the issue of sports betting and possibilities for Illinois, but also about gaming expansion in Illinois. And you alluded to Senate Bill 7, which is a gaming expansion legislation. What is in that, and where are we at on that?
So Senate Bill 7 has been the latest version of a comprehensive gaming package, which would allow six new casinos, racinos, or slots at tracks, per se, does some components to video gaming and how the jackpots and the amounts of bets. So it's a package that we've talked about with the new casino sites, one being added in Southern Illinois.
I was going to ask, what are the casino sites that would be authorized?
The six would be Chicago, South Suburbs, Lake County, Rockford, Danville, and in Williams County, which is in Southern Illinois, is the latest version of new casinos. It would allow slots at tracks, or racinos, right, as some would call it. Cook County being Hawthorne and Arlington, and in downstate Fairmont. Since the last time we talked, there was Balmoral and Maywood, which are no longer
right
in operation now. That's the basic components of seven. I mean, there's a whole lot to it.
Sure. So where is this thing? I mean, is it going to move?
It's in the House, it's in committee, and so the latest with the sports book has now put a whole lot of focus back on how we could put this package together and move it forward.
But again, given that complexity, I mean, you know, in typically just that expansion part alone, that's where all the infighting goes on.
Yes. It's brought these stakeholders together.
But then when you bring sports into it, yeah. Except, you know, as we were talking, the complications of that are myriad. And, you know, I know that, for example, Nevada, their gaming board has actually, you know, offered their kind of best practices to states to examine.
Yes. And the opportunity, though, that I see is that everyone is talking in a positive manner about this. Now, last year and a couple of years ago, they had the fantasy sports, which
right
caused a major divide into all the stakeholders. And you say, well, what's the difference, you know, between the fantasy sports betting and sports betting? And the biggest component, I mean, the sports betting is sports betting, as we would know it, or as you would know it. Fantasy is more of a pari-mutuel, where you're betting against others. And it's not the traditional, you know, are the Bears going to win to cover the line or
right
not? But I see a great opportunity in this.
So maybe nothing moves forward with expansion until the details can be worked out about the sports component, and then do it as one
big package. And yes, and that's what, you know, Senate Bill 7's in the House, it's passed the Senate, it's in committee, so that component is there, that has been vetted and back and forth. I'm not saying that the House hadn't put some of its say-so into that, but the sports betting is an additional new component that we're diving into and going to see what we could come up with in 11 days.
I don't see in 11 days. I'm not optimistic about 11 days.
But then it gives us the opportunity to try to move forward. Something that we've been talking about and trying to do for a number of years.
I want to ask you, too, about, and I talked to Republican State Senator Sue Resin about this, the governor's mandatory veto rewrite of the 72-hour waiting period for military-style firearms.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it was a very comprehensive rewrite. It reinstates the death penalty for the death of a law enforcement officer or the deaths of two or more people. It expands that 72-hour waiting period, which is currently for handguns, but expands it to all firearms. There's various other components to it as well. It just seems to me as overwhelmingly comprehensive, and that I know bills are sometimes leveraged where you got to take the good with the bad. But this one, given the regional variations that exist in the state on issues involving guns, that it seems too comprehensive to me.
Well, we got this very serious issue that we've been dealing with guns, and to me, taking this measure, using the amendatory veto to divert what the actual bill, the underlying bill, was to do, and you know, we've seen this in the past and how governors may use their tools that they would say or their authority, but by changing it like that, it's just throwing a whole this is stuff that we've dealt with in the past.
Well, I mean, the death penalty was abolished 7 years ago. It effectively ended when George Ryan put the moratorium on.
And then we officially, I think we were talking about what, 7 years ago that was...
7 years it formally became a state law.
So it's just a diversion in a way, a complicated issue as it is, but in what we've been seeing going on with guns and violence, is, especially here in Chicago.
Well, and now, of course, what we saw in Santa Fe, Texas, as well. And there's a component that would be for school police officers funding for those. But it's a very complicated component because it requires voters in a county to levy a sales tax for schools that not all counties have done. And if they've done it already, that's for school construction purposes. And there would have to be another referendum to move that money for school police resources.
Yeah, we're going to see how we go forward with something like this. But, you know, he acted on it, I don't know, when was that?
About a week ago. And so it's now a House Judiciary Committee hearing tomorrow.
Because you have 15 days to act on the...
veto and see whether the veto override efforts succeed or whether this bill goes on the board, which Speaker Madigan's office says he's going to put it on the board.
So it'll be very interesting times here. We
will see. Democratic State Representative Bob Rita from Blue Island, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me here.
Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Showcase studio. And joining me here in the studio is Chicago mayoral candidate Lori Lightfoot.
Thank you so much for coming in. Yeah, my pleasure to be here, Rick.
And I'm kind of jealous. You told me you were out with your daughter on the field at Wrigley yesterday.
Yeah, it was really a fantastic experience. The kids had a great time. Got to see their faces on the big screen and just play on the field, which was great, and go into the dugout.
And she's 10, right?
She's 10 years old, yes.
Yeah, so when I was 10, there wasn't any video board. And that was a long time ago, too. I'm not even sure there was Ivy then. No, I'm kidding. Thank you so much for coming in. And in this huge field,
yes,
I think, you know, it represents some discontent with the current leadership. Mm-hmm. But how do you stake out yourself in a crowded field?
Well, you know, obviously in any campaign, whether there's a crowded field or it's a smaller field, you want to seek ways that you can get your messaging out to the people and distinguish yourself. And that's exactly what we're going to be doing, regardless of who is in or who's not in. You know, I think that what is clear to me is that Chicago's going in the wrong direction. And in looking at the folks that I've talked to over many years now, it's also very clear to me that they want a different direction for the city. And so what we're going to be talking about is offering a new progressive course for the city, getting rid of the us versus them mentality and style of governance that, frankly, has dominated for too long and certainly over the last 7 years, and really focusing on bringing people to the table at the front of a process and not at the back end of process. So we're going to be talking about, for example, the fact that taxes are too high in our city, about the fact that we are the only metropolitan area in the country that's losing population ought to be a sense of urgency. To me, it's the proverbial canary in the mine shaft. So we've got to start talking about it and looking at that issue so that we can keep our core population in middle class and lower income folks. We've got to look at, obviously, the violence issue is something that I think a lot of people for a while thought, well, this is really not affecting me, but I'm hearing from people now all over the city and some of the, frankly, most posh areas of the city who are saying, we're afraid, we're concerned, what's going on? What can we do about that? And the answer there is really twofold. Obviously, law enforcement has a role to play, and we've got to do everything we can to make sure that our police department continues to engage in constitutional policing. But the other part of it is violence is a symptom. It is a symptom of a community under duress, under stress. And looking at what's going on in way too many neighborhoods in our city, you see a dearth of resources. We see way too many of our kids living in poverty. We see individuals who are experiencing generational unemployment at numbers 30, 40, and in some instances 50% that resemble the third world and not one of the most global cities in the world. We see the absence of community anchors like good schools and churches, community organizations, parks that you can actually go to. We see vacant lots and trash-strewn neighborhoods, the absence of, you name it, food deserts, medical deserts, pharmacy deserts, on and on and on. And what that says to me is we have to have a comprehensive plan to uplift neighborhoods, to build up our small business core. And frankly, that's what's lacking, and the leadership is lacking. And that's one of the things not only we're going to be talking about, but we're going to offer detailed plans to address that.
You touched on the fact about gun violence mm-hmm. being not just the province of certain areas anymore,
right.
But now, have we kind of reached a tipping point on that issue of gun violence where before people would kind of segment it off to areas of the city that now it's people everywhere in the city?
No, I think that this is an issue now that reverberates with people in every neighborhood in our city. Now, look, the fact that we've had so many young people killed, you know, we're now talking in the news about the tragic shooting at the school just outside of Houston, which, of course, is a tragedy. But the reality is, whether it's in Houston, whether it's in Parkland or elsewhere, we're having that kind of body count, that kind of tragedy that destroys individuals and families and communities on at least a monthly basis, if not sooner. So it's something that...
Sometimes a weekly basis.
Sometimes, unfortunately, a weekly basis. It should shock the consciousness of all of us, but now what we see is people feeling the effects of violence creeping into neighborhoods that it wouldn't necessarily traditionally creep into, but regardless, this is an issue that affects all of us as Chicagoans, and we have to dig down deep and compel the folks who are responsible for this to have a real, meaningful plan. It's got to be multi-tiered. Clearly, law enforcement has a role to play. But even if the Chicago Police Department and our federal partners were operating at full capacity, which I think there's still many areas in which they should be much more unified and a strategy to deal with the guns that are flowing over our borders from India, Indiana, from frankly Mississippi and other states, and we'll talk specifically about how to deal with that. You got to also use your smarts and soft power, and that's why digging in and having a comprehensive plan to uplift neighborhoods and communities, that is, we don't call that violence reduction, but it has that effect.
Well, and I think everybody does understand there is that economic component that exists, a lack of opportunity, that helps feed the crime problem.
Right.
But where does government fit into that?
Well, I think that in that regard, government has and I'll just say specifically, city government and a mayor should be taking the lead on that issue. We have a tremendous amount of resources in the city, as you well know. Literally world-class resources at the neighborhood level, in the academy, in business, in philanthropic community, the civil rights community. What we need, though, is a leader who can be a convener of those resources. And I say this all the time. The governor and the mayor said, 600 people all in for Amazon. You know, and God bless, I hope we do get Amazon, but I'd still like to know what was the deal that we offered Amazon. But imagine if we harness something like that kind of talent, to address the violence that's happening, economic development, the lack of opportunity and jobs. That is the critical role that a mayor and a real leader should play in bringing people together on the at the table to help address and solve these problems. And when I go out and I talk to different groups, and I talk to people who I know are subject matter experts on a range of these issues, I always ask them, is anybody from the mayor's office been in contact with you? Has anybody from the mayor's office ever asked you to do X, Y, or Z, or to find out about what you're doing? And almost universally, the answer is no. That's a mistake. That is a lost opportunity, and it's not one that I'm going to squander.
That's Lori Lightfoot. She is a mayoral candidate for the city of Chicago. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more right after this. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, and I'm joined here in studio by Lori Lightfoot, who is candidate for Chicago mayor, talking about her campaign. One of the things you touched on before the break was the issue of being overtaxed
yes,
in the city. of course, tax is always a big concern, yep. But there are, you know, we're on the hook for things to pay for, you know,
right.
Pensions,
right.
You know, and infrastructure.
Right.
How would you adjust the tax system?
Well, look, what I've been saying about the taxes is they're regressive, which means, in effect, that the secretary is paying the same tax rate as the CEO. And, of course, that makes no sense. And I think that's what makes people upset. Everyone knows that government has to function, and it has to function with revenue. But what I think we need to do, though, Rick, is this. We need to understand what the true magnitude of the financial challenge is. And we don't know that. There's not been nearly enough transparency around that. And we've got to get our fiscal house in order. I mean, every day we see a screaming headline about literally tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars that have been squandered through race, whether it's lawsuits, which there seems to be no accountability for, whether it's overtime for this or that entity that blows through the prescribed budget, whether it's mistakes that are being made in court, whether it's the red light camera overtime settlement. What that says to me is that, and I know from my own experience with city government, there is nobody who's focused on making sure that we identify and mitigate risk. The Inspector General recommended, I think over a year ago, that the city actually hire and employ and empower a risk manager. Now, imagine this, the city government, right, this tens of billions of dollars that are being spent every single year. Can you imagine any business that would not have a risk manager and a unit that is focused on mitigating risk? And yet that's where we are in Chicago, which of course makes no sense. So one of the first things I will do when I'm elected mayor is to empower and hire a risk manager. Now, even if you cut out all the fraud, waste, and abuse that's going on in city government, that's not going to get you enough revenue to address this huge looming pension problem that by statute now has got to be paid up in 2020 and I think again in 2023. But we can't talk to people about revenue until we can demonstrate to them that we have taken the seriousness of making sure that we don't squander their precious tax dollars. And that is not happening now and hasn't happened over the last 7 years, and we've got to have a significant course correction on that. And on pensions, look, there is no magic solution. If there was a magic solution, all the efforts that have been tried by many, many people over these last few years would change that around. But in Chicago in particular, the one thing that we have to do, again, is make sure that we're using the best in practice investment policies, one in which we don't pay a lot of high fees and get little return. And that's what we've seen over the last few years, making projections that we're never going to meet. And that's a problem. And that is, again, not maximizing the opportunity to really generate principal in our investment funds. So that's something that we actually have to turn around as well.
So are you saying that the rate of return that these actuarial assumptions the city uses are based on inflated expectation of,
yes,
rate of return?
They miss their marks year after year after year, and that's a problem. So what that says to me is twofold. Either we're not making the right assumptions, or that we're using an investment strategy that is outdated. And one of the things that we will be looking at, we'll be talking about this in more detail as the campaign rolls on, you know, investment in pension funds is something that is done by every state, a lot of municipalities across the country. There's a lot that we can learn from the best in class from those different pension funds, and making sure that we're using proven strategies that maximize the return and lower the fees. I don't think we're doing that in Chicago, and we've got to get to that place.
You announced your campaign on Friday afternoon, announced receiving over $240,000 in contributions, kind of a...
Reportable contributions,
reportable.
Over 270 all
right.
In.
Right, but kind of a sign of, mm-hmm, of moving forward with your campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is a cost of entry into running for this.
No doubt about it.
And I think in that... Unfortunately, money is a show of strength in the way...
It's a test of viability.
Yeah, but is it fair? I mean, is our campaign finance system fair?
Yeah, I mean, of course it's not. It's badly out of whack. It was out of whack before the Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United. It's out of whack here in Illinois. We look at a gubernatorial election that's probably going to break national records in the amount of money that's spent, probably way in excess of $200 million, which is unbelievable. And look, Rahm raised $25 million to... you know, limp over the finish line against Chewy. I would expect he's going to blow through that number by a considerable margin. But what I hear from people is they're sick of the money in politics. Now, you can't unilaterally disarm, right? You've got to have enough money to be viable, to get your message out. But I do think that the gross amounts of money that we're being seen raised on all sorts of levels is going to be a storyline in this case. I favor some kind of public finance. You know, we've got, for example, a big push for an elected school board, which I favor. We've got a big push for some kind of election body to oversee the Chicago Police Department. And we can talk about whether or not what form that should take and whether or not that makes sense. But the question that we have to answer in all of those, let's have an elected this or elected that, how do we make sure that average citizens who are interested in governance actually have the ability to have access? Because if as you know, to quote Dan Biss, if it's an auction and not an election, all that's going to do is turn more and more people off. They're going to feel completely estranged from government and elected officials, and they're going to vote by staying home. We need people to be active and engaged in our democracy, and one of the most important pillars, of course, is going and casting your vote. But if they don't feel like elections matter, if they don't feel like the people who are the candidates are actually listening to them and are articulating issues that are relevant to their life, they're not going to engage, and that is highly problematic to our democracy.
Well, and as you mentioned, like with an issue like the elected school board and even an elected police oversight, right, where special interests weigh in, and it's their money that helps drive candidates that, and that influences outcomes.
I have great concerns about that. I'm all for citizen involvement and direct involvement in, for example, oversight of the police department, because we have a $2 billion enterprise that every single day has the ability to dramatically affect the lives of individual citizens. Of course, citizens should have a say in how that entity operates. And again, the devil's in the details, of course, but I don't want to see a circumstance where one interest group versus another has the money and the resources to populate those kinds of boards, and then the true citizen involvement is completely mythical and farcical because individual citizens are shut out. We've got to make sure that we have a system in place so that the average person with a modest amount of resources can actually participate.
Lori, where can people learn more about your campaign?
They can go to our website at LightfootForChicago.com, LightfootForChicago.com. You can follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, or on Instagram.
That's Lori Lightfoot, candidate for Chicago mayor. Thank you so much for joining me here in studio today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.